One description that I have shared with some of you in Dokusan of this practice, the essence of this practice, which we call Zazen, is the, I put it in these words, the ultimate non-action of non-delusion. The ultimate non-action of non-delusion. So today I'm going to try to describe this in detail and how to get to this level. Now that first word, ultimate, points at something about this practice. Ultimate means the highest. There's nothing higher. This is the spirit of Zazen that we all know, of endlessly perfecting it, perfecting it, perfecting it. Deeper, deeper, further, further, clearer, clearer. The ultimate non-action. Now, yesterday we went into depth into the non-action aspect of this practice, which is, in another word, dispassion, which is not the same as not caring. Dispassion is clear seeing. We talked about the visionary Albert Einstein and his profound insight that there was a limiting speed in the universe, which was the speed of photons, speed of light. Nothing can go faster than that. Now let's leave aside the hyperinflation, 1 trillionth of a trillionth of a second after the Big Bang, because I don't think photons were around at that point. Let's leave that aside. 186,000 miles per second. Nothing can go faster than that. That means that everything presenting now is absolute. Why? Because you can't exceed the speed at which it came to you. So you can't go back and change it. Because if you could exceed the speed of light, you could go back in time. And that is not allowed. That is a universal law. You can't go back. So everything presenting. Now, I use the analogy of the sun going out. If the sun went out because something hit the sun, we would see the sun go out. But it would have happened 8 minutes and 20 seconds before we saw it. We couldn't at that point go fast enough to stop whatever made the sun go out. So we have to wrap our arms around it. Similarly, this very moment, the moment you smell the incense, the moment a sound hits your ear, perhaps it was a nanosecond before that the causes and conditions, the karma of the entire fabric of space-time coming together in your point in the center of the universe created this that you now are aware of. Even if it were a nanosecond, it's too late. It's done. This is the very beginning of practice. Until you get this, it's very difficult to do good practice. Meaning, the ultimate non-action of non-delusion. Because we'll continually be acting, trying to change things, fighting with our karma, struggling, reacting. And in this way we float, we stay in the first six consciousnesses. We can't go down to the seventh and then the eighth and the ninth. This is why the first six consciousnesses are called the six thieves. They rob us of our ability to go into the center of our being, because we're constantly holding on, doing battle, pushing away, bargaining, strategizing, wondering about, analyzing, philosophizing. Those aren't unimportant talents and abilities, but they are deadly here in the Zendo, deadly to this ultimate non-action of non-delusion. They keep us floating. As I described to some of you in Dokusan, if you've ever gone diving, you wear something called a buoyancy compensator. It's a jacket. It enables you to adjust your buoyancy at varying depths. Now you start, you roll off the boat on your back into the water. You start with your BC, your buoyancy compensator, full of air. It fills with air from a pressurized tank that you also breathe from. And you're floating until you start to let the air out. If you don't let the air out, you will never go down and see the remarkable world down there. You can't go down there as long as there's air in your BC. So in this realm here in the Zendo, air in your BC is all the strategizing, thinking, analyzing, fighting, etc., etc. Because you missed something very critical. You missed that by the time you know anything, it's a done deal. That's why yesterday I said that this remarkable human being, Albert Einstein, through his discovery, enabled us to understand why things are absolute. That means couldn't have been any other way, therefore cannot have any comparison made that makes sense. Therefore, may I open up the space in my awareness to allow it its moment. And that's the very beginning of letting the air out of your BC. So you can sink down below the six consciousnesses, which are eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. So this dispassion is the starting point. Now when we sink down below, we get to another level. It's called the seventh consciousness. It's a very critical place. It's been described as the I consciousness or ego consciousness. I don't like the word ego consciousness so much because it has sort of a pejorative connotation. There's nothing at all bad about the seventh consciousness. You must go there. If you want to do this work, you have to know how to enter there, but not stop there. You have to go to the seventh consciousness, which is the interface between the six consciousnesses of eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, thoughts, feelings, emotions, sounds, smells, in the eighth consciousness, which has no form, no color, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch. When the eighth consciousness, which incidentally permeates all the other levels, permeates, comes in contact with the six consciousnesses, it in a sense becomes colored, you might say contaminated. And at that level we have seventh consciousness. It's our identity with an entity, which initially we give characteristics to. So this entity, we give it a name, and we give it characteristics. All the ways in which it's wonderful, all the ways in which it's terrible. All the ways in which it's failed, all the ways in which it's succeeded. All the things we like about it, all the things we don't like about it. And most importantly, the way it seems to stand apart from the six consciousnesses, peering back at it, using these activities which we call seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking. Because it stands apart, there seems to be this intermediary of seeing, smelling, hearing, etc. It stands apart, so there must be something carrying the information from this separate myriad entities, dharmas, encapsulated by the six consciousnesses, to the central I. So this is the mind at this deep level, contacting the six senses, not yet understanding its other side, the side that contacts the eighth consciousness, doesn't quite see that clearly yet. There's an inkling. If there wasn't an inkling, no one would ever enter a Zendo. Something deep inside already knows, just already knows. Now, when it looks in the other direction, it can't see anything. Can't hear anything. Can't smell anything. Matter of fact, it can't engage in seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking. When it's pointed deeper, when it lets a little more air out of that buoyancy compensator. Now, down at this level, how do you let air out of the buoyancy compensator? How do you do it? We talked about how you get down from the sixth consciousnesses into the seventh by seeing that anything you know has already happened. It's absolute. Therefore, you develop this dispassionate, all-embracing, you can be in the sunshine of my awareness in this moment. So I don't tangle with you, contend with you, strategize about you. Rather, I use you as a wonderful source, a tool. I don't push you away. You are the manifestation of mind in this moment. How precious. And now I turn my attention not outward at these forms in the world, but inwards to what seems to be perceiving them, the so-called seventh consciousness. I even take some of this sixth consciousness down there with me. For example, I take Mu down there with me. Mu before was floating among the smells and sounds and tastes and touches. That's part of Mu practice too. But I want to go down. How do I do it? Well, I notice something. I'm working on this Mu, and it doesn't have to be Mu. It could simply be counting your breath or following the breath or Shikantaza. Whatever enters your consciousness at that moment, as I've said to some of you in Dokusan, Not one iota of it is outside you. Not even a gluon, a neutrino of it. Not one particle of it is outside you. The sixth patriarch said this. He said, there is no mirror standing there. There's no mirror stand. From the very beginning, not a single thing has ever existed. So where can dust alight? From the very beginning, not a single thing has ever existed, has ever stood outside you. So now I begin to get it that any particular thing I focus on, and maybe I'll just focus on Mu because it's so neutral, although I have all sorts of thoughts and ideas about that too, but my teacher will beat those out of me. I'll use Mu now to go down into the center. So I realize that not one iota of Mu is outside me. It becomes very intimate now. It starts to sink down into the seventh consciousness. It becomes very intimate. What do I mean by intimate? I mean only I know it. Nothing else that could possibly be imagined to be outside this I could possibly know it, and I know that. I know that even more than I have faith in Buddhism. I know that. Nothing outside me can know this Mu. So when I'm focusing intently on Mu, or listening intently to a sound, or smelling intently an incense smell, I know that I am experiencing myself. Now, how do I let more air out of this buoyancy compensator? So I know that, but there seems to be something standing apart, right? I have Mu down here in my center, but I'm here and Mu is there. This is that thin, diaphanous, gauzy, iron curtain. How do I cross it? I can't seem to cross it. This I standing apart, it still is contaminated. It still has stuff clinging to it. It has very tightly held, deeply held, learned at a very young age, and repeated over and over and over and over like a mantra. I am this and that kind of so-and-so. How is that any different than any other dharma, including Mu? It's another object in your mind. It can't think Mu. It can't smell incense. It can't hear sounds. How can an object of my awareness do any of those things? It's obvious. So that can't possibly be the me on one side of this iron curtain. It can't be. Now, if I really look clearly, I see how all the things that this pure seventh consciousness, the side of it facing the eighth consciousness, got contaminated with, were all the aspects of the inevitable, moment-by-moment, absolute world of karma, forms. What I learned, what I was taught, my successes, my failures, my traumas, everything. It's okay. But that's not what's hearing. It's So I go even deeper. Now I go to a very subtle place. It's really what you could call the pure second consciousness, pure. It's the pure eye, the center, seems separate, but it's not those characteristics. You know that now. You know it's not those characteristics. Yes, those characteristics seem to follow it around and even seem stuck to it. And oftentimes it's an incredible pain and a hassle. But there it is. You now have to apply that dispassion that you learned when you were up at the six consciousnesses level. That if it could have been one iota different, as our dear teacher Richard would always say, it would have been. Therefore, I don't need to contend or tangle with it. Just let me point my attention in a different direction. Let me point it into this sense of knowing, being. I am. What happens now? Mu even drops away. Nothing can enter this space. Now I'm peering deeply within. I'm looking, but I don't see anything. I'm listening, but I don't hear anything. No thoughts. This is, as Hakuin put it, the grand round mirror is black as pitch. I may need to spend a long time here and really probe deeply. Sometimes coming down, the tank starts to run out of air, I go back up, get a fresh bottle, rest, off gas the nitrogen, go back down. That's our practice. Continually, I'm so curious at this level. I'm so endlessly fascinated. What is it? What is it? Now the masters warn, don't stop even here. You have to smash out the bottom of the black lacquer bucket. No one can tell you how to do this. But you notice they use the term smash. Smash. This is the heart, the passion, the intensity that naturally begins to arise when the deep question is there. And nothing's going to stop me. Nothing can possibly stop me. I must go all the way into it, all the way through it. Now, can anyone tell you about that? Well, you could describe it, but in reality, not even a Buddha can say a word about the realm from which thoughts issue. That's a famous saying in Zen. Not even a Buddha can say a single word about that realm. You must go there yourself. All any teacher can do is point the direction, perhaps give you the tools, and also encourage you and make you feel safe to go there. Because even going to the seventh consciousness, we're not talking now even looking down into the eighth consciousness, or breaking through into the ninth consciousness, or what they call cosmic consciousness, or enlightenment. Just going to seventh consciousness, for the average untrained person, untrained in Zazen, is a very scary and fearsome thing, and they will never go there. It's the place of aloneness. It's a place of being cut off. It's a place of hell. That's how they fear it. We Zen students know better because we get very comfortable going there. But we seem to get stuck there a lot. Can't quite get pointed in the deeper direction. Now, one other interesting thing. I'll just mention it. It's just a wonderful paradox of nature, or amazing fact. Nothing can go faster than the speed of light. But the substance of light never ages. The clock is stopped. As light moves and changes and goes through all the karmic machinations of cause and effect, time is ticking away. But for the substance of whatever it is going through these machinations, which is called light, the clock is stopped. That means that this source substance has never changed. There was no beginning to it because the clock has stopped. There's no end to it because the clock has stopped. Read a koan that may help to elucidate this a little bit further. This is from the Mumon Kan, and this is case number 27. And it's nonsense, not mind, not Buddha, not things. Not action, not delusion. A monk asks Nansen, is there any Dharma that has not been preached to the people? Nansen answered, there is. What is the truth that has never been taught? Asked the monk. Nansen said, it is not mind. It is not Buddha. It is not things. Anything you can say about it is not it, because anything you can say about it is still your object. Let the air out. You can't say anything about it. So Mumon makes a comment. This is really beautiful, simple, stark. Mumon says here, at this question, Nansen used up all his treasure. No one could ever tell you more true words than these. He used up all his treasure, all. He exhausted all measures. There's another part of this sentence. And he adds, and was not a little confused. Mumon always has this wry kind of speech. So not only did he use up all his treasure, he was not a little confused. What does that mean? Remember what the Master Jizo said to Hogan when Hogan was on a pilgrimage and he ended up at Jizo's hermitage deep in the forest one night. Knocked on the door and Jizo welcomed him in. He said, where are you from? You know, that wonderful test question. He said, I've been wandering on a pilgrimage from place to place. And Jesus said, what is the purpose of your pilgrimage? And there was a long pause. And Hogan said, I don't know. Jizo then said to Hogan, not knowing is most intimate. This is why Nansen was not a little confused. any kind of knowing is still objectifying. This is the turning of the flashlight of the mind back on itself. It can only be done in not knowing, not seeing, not hearing, not smelling. As the Heart Sutra puts it, no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, no color, sound, smell, taste, touch, or what the mind takes hold of, meaning thoughts. So Mumon has a verse, and he says, talking too much spoils your virtue. Silence is truly unequaled. Remember the silence of Vimalakirti. Perhaps this is why I haven't felt moved to give encouragement talks at the end of a wonderful day of this incredible ultimate practice of non-doing, of delusion. Just seem to be coming back up. The silence is truly unequaled. Let the mountains become the sea. That is, let all the time pass that would eventually wear mountains down to sand. I'll give you no comment. So, my friends, I've only pointed a direction. I'll give you no further comment. And the Teisho is over.